All right, let us begin. With great respect and with great kindness, it's a pleasure to welcome you all to Spirit Rock Online. Welcome to the weekly Women's Sit with Juliana Sloan, sitting in for Grace Fisher. Grace will be back next week. This class goes today from 10 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific time. So wonderful to host you all again. Your regular host, Carlita, should be back next week. She is doing some awesome work over in the long duration hybrid retreat that is in some, I don't know, 100th day. They're doing something amazing over there. To give us all a feel for who we're sitting with and how vast a circle we're in, I do invite you all to let us know in chat where you're calling in from. And let me make sure that I give you all the power. Hold on one sec. And yes, you can chat. You can chat to the world now. Spirit Rock is located both online globally and on land in the San Geronimo Valley, which is part of the unceded Coast Miwok ancestral territory that's in Northern California. When we welcome you, all parts of you, your color, your culture, your beliefs, gender orientations, abilities, ages, education, economies, 40 years of Dharma study, or especially no experience of Dharma study. Bienvenidos and welcome. Please fully take your place in this circle. If we haven't met yet, my name is Maria Cristina Tavera. My friends call me Christina. I am one of the online hosts here at Spirit Rock, and I get to be your host today. If you've been here, you've heard what I'm about to say. If you haven't been here, spend a little time with me, and we'll soon start. To maintain the serenity of this global meditation hall, we have you on mute, and the chat is to host only once the teacher starts. During Q&A, we're going to use that raised hand feature. It's under the Participants or Reactions tab, or you can chat me if you prefer to be anonymous with your question. If you've missed a part of the teachings, I may not necessarily be the person to help you, so please keep your questions for the teacher during Q&A. Closed captioning will be on in just a moment, as I'm noticing I haven't turned it on yet. Link to the participants guide will be in the chat. It has some really great resources and references, especially from week to week if you've missed anything. So you might want to check that out. The Sangha and the teacher, all of us, we really appreciate your cameras on. It does give us a sense of community. It's actually the reason why we're still on Zoom live is to help a sister out. And some of you may have tons of Sangha around you, and some of you may be standing somewhere in the middle of somewhere with no other Sangha. So we appreciate your video. A reminder, May is time for a new link. So you may need to re-register before next week's class to have your Zoom link working. I get to welcome the beautiful Juliana Sloan back to Spirit Rock. Juliana is a mindfulness teacher, depth hypnosis practitioner, and applied shamanic counselor. She leads an online meditation group for women and has been a teacher at Spirit Rock's teen and family programs for like forever. And it's always a pleasure to work with her. She's always in and out of programming and supporting us. And we're just so grateful to have you back, Juliana. Bienvenida. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Christina. It's so great to be here. I'm so good to be with you today. And wonderful to be here with no tech challenges. The last time I was here, my internet went out 5 minutes before the group started. So I'm so happy to be here with you, with things running smoothly. And so good to see everyone, seeing a lot of familiar faces. And I'd love to just invite you, if you're new to the group, maybe just pop that into the chat so that we can welcome you. And please do feel free to also type in where you're zooming in from, because it's just so fun to see where we all are in different parts of the world. It is, yeah, just such a delight always to be here with you all. And we'll begin in a moment just with an arriving sit. Vancouver Island, welcome, Kat. Great. I'm seeing folks pop into the chat now. All right. So, yeah, just just taking a few minutes now for us to arrive together. We've got Sinem from Oakland, Lafayette, California. Welcome. Welcome, Theda. Great. Hi, Maria. Good to see you. Great, great. Really good to be with you all. And so as you're ready, just arriving here. We've taken this. Hey, Diane. Good to see you. Hey, Dolores. Great seeing you here. So we've taken this morning or afternoon or evening, depending on where you're calling from, just to renew our practice, to renew our connection and community. And so I'll just invite you as we begin to, if it's comfortable for you, to close your eyes. And if it's not so great to close your eyes, that's totally fine. You can just leave them open with a soft gaze, not really focused on anything, ideally directed away from the computer screen, since that can be pretty activating. I'm just taking a moment here to feel your body resting on the chair or the cushion or the couch, wherever you find yourself. Feeling the movement of the breath and the body as you rest here. Noticing the way as you breathe that the breath makes so many subtle movements in the body. You might notice the rise and fall of the shoulders, expansion of the rib cage. The muscles in the back or stomach. And just arriving. Knowing you're here today in a circle of other like-minded people. Knowing we're here to support each other in our practice. Knowing that whatever comes later on today or came earlier today in your life, that for these couple of hours, you can set it down gently and take this time for yourself. And as you continue to arrive into this practice space together, you might even want to consider your intention in being here today. It might be a desire to care for yourself or find a space of peace and rest. There might be an intention around being in this field of community and supporting yourself while you also support others' practice. Just noticing what's true for you now, today. In your intention to be here, to practice the Dharma. Knowing that as we practice movement meditation, sitting meditation, connection together, that if you ever feel lost or overwhelmed or just distracted, that you can always come back to the sense of your intention. Your motivation for being here. And as you're ready, just opening your eyes. And you may want to just slowly reorient to the room that you're in, moving the eyes, the head and neck. Just noticing seeing. And just returning back to our circle. Welcome. It's always so good to be here with this group. Such a special crew of people. And so in just a few minutes, we'll move into our movement practice, moving meditation. As we just continue to enter deeper into this morning retreat. And as we do, I'd really love to encourage you to listen to your body. You know, each one of us is coming into this sangha with a totally different experience of what it's like to be in the body, what feels comfortable in terms of the way that we move our bodies, and also really what our bodies need right now. Whether you're navigating illness or fatigue, recovering from surgery, or there are other challenges that make movement a little bit harder today. Traditionally, we usually talk about walking practice. And if walking is available to you, I fully and wholeheartedly invite you to explore the walking practice. It is very powerful, and actually, it's said that many of the meditation masters who reached awakening, many of them actually woke up while they were practicing walking meditation. Being out in the elements, moving the body, and just letting the wisdom of the body and the wisdom of our connection to the earth as we walk across it be present. So if you practice walking meditation today, just invite you, whether you're indoors in your home or you have access to an outdoor space, to really allow yourself to connect to the grounding nature of that walking practice, really noticing what each footfall is like. What is it like for your feet to make contact with the earth? And if the mind wanders off, it's fine. Just bringing it right back. Just the contact of the feet on the earth. Just keeping it simple. It doesn't have to be super complicated. And if walking doesn't feel like a great idea for you today, I'd really love to invite you to move mindfully in whatever way feels best for you. And for some of us, that may just be remaining seated and allowing movement in the hands and arms and really feeling what is it like? This body right now, all the muscles, all the bones, and just staying with the experience of the body as you move. You might also elect to do mindful yoga, mindful qigong, just making sure that you stay with the body, listening to that wisdom of the body as you move in whatever way feels right for you today. So we'll go now and we'll return in 20 minutes at 40 after the hour. I look forward to seeing you in a little while. Enjoy the period. I think we probably still have some folks continuing to arrive from their movement practice. So, yeah. Oh, great. Welcome back. Good to see your faces. So, as we know, as we all begin to return, we'll just move into gently into our sitting practice. So just whenever you're ready, finding a posture that feels comfortable for you. And depending on what's happening for you today, that may be a very upright sitting posture, and just to give also permission, if right now this is a day where you need to practice a laying down meditation practice, you're totally invited to and welcome to. You know, sometimes we don't always give ourselves that permission. And so just allowing the eyes to close in whatever posture you find yourself in. Hearing the sounds in the room.
noticing if you can receive the sounds that are here in the room, in the building that you're in. And also perhaps if you can notice the sounds that are farther afield, somewhere out there. And just letting the sounds that you're receiving with the sense of hearing just begin to support you in orienting to the place that you're in. Letting sound help orient you to the room, the building that you're resting in, but also to the world outside, the yard or neighborhood. Town or city that you find yourself in. The earth below you and sky above you. And the watershed that you share with countless other plants and animals. Knowing as you practice that you're practicing in relationship to all of this. And just beginning to allow now your attention to rest on the sensation, the experience of the body breathing. And just noticing where in the body you can feel the breath moving through most easily. It could be the sensation of air at the nostrils. The expansion and contraction of the rib cage as the chest rises and falls. It could be the feeling of the breath deep in the belly. Or more of a global whole body sense of this being, this body breathing. And just allowing yourself to settle into whatever aspect of the breath feels most supportive to you. Knowing that if practicing with the breath is not great for your system, that you can always move into that practice that we began with of noticing sound. But if the breath is a supportive place for you to be, just really allowing yourself to access that. Rest in that. Seeing if as you bring your attention to the breath as the object of your concentration during this practice, if you can bring your full presence, your full body, mind, and heart into being with the breath. And we'll practice like this. As you practice being with the breath, you might notice that physical sensations arise and pass and change, that emotions well up and dissipate, that thinking is here happening in the mind. Knowing that you don't have to push any of these experiences away. You can notice them, honor them, tend to them. And release them. Returning back to the breath, back to the body. And bringing a wholehearted attention to the body breathing. As we sit with the body breathing, we begin to sense into the ways that even in this time of stillness, that there's so much movement. When we tend to the breath in this way, we feel the ways in which this living being, this body we inhabit, is so much more like a verb or a process than a noun, an object. We start to see the movement in the stillness and the stillness present in the movement. Our task is to show up, to pay attention, and to allow the body breathing to reveal itself to us. And in these final few minutes of our practice, just letting go of the attention towards the breath. And just taking some time to notice what it's like for you right here, right now. Feeling the presence of mindfulness. And just noticing what it's like in the mind. In the body. In the heart. Just bringing that present, patient, compassionate awareness into what it's like for you in this moment. And you might notice that there's some aspect of your experience that might need your attention, your care. Whatever's here for you, just allowing it to be held, soothed by your full presence and caring attention. And as you're ready, just opening your eyes and coming back into this circle. Thank you for your practice. There's so much that we can learn just by offering our presence, offering our heart to what we're experiencing in the moment. And as we continue to work with this, to practice with this, to cultivate this sense of presence so much as possible. In the Dharma, as you all probably are quite familiar with, there are a lot of lists. We've got the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, Five Hindrances, many, many others. And as you've experienced in your practice, you've probably noticed, you know, each one of these lists helps point us towards a type of understanding or towards the supportive qualities of mind, of heart, that can guide us towards freedom and away from suffering. And one of these lists is called the Five Powers or the Five Strengths. And, you know, these are five qualities, five faculties of the mind that can really support us in our practice and really help us resist the ways that greed and aversion and delusion can take hold. And it's said that when these five strengths are present and really in balance, that they can actually generate the power in our mind and our heart that's needed for awakening, that's needed for enlightenment. And so these five powers are faith, energy or effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And, you know, in a lot of the meditation instruction we receive, I don't know, this is my experience and it may be yours as well. We hear a lot about energy. We hear a lot about mindfulness. We hear a lot about concentration and the cultivation of wisdom. But we don't always talk about that first power, faith. The word for faith in Pali, the language of the Buddha, is sadha. And, you know, this can translate to faith or belief or devotion. And, you know, but how many of us maybe have a little bit of a hesitation when we hear the word faith, or there's a connotation that comes with it? I know for me that things come up. There's political connotations in it for me. There's all kinds of things. And I work with a lot of folks in my counseling and hypnotherapy practice who've actually been harmed in a variety of ways by religious institutions and ideologies. So faith might be a word that they also bristle up against. And so I want to actually step us back a little bit, because faith can be a loaded word for so many. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that a lot of the Victorian era translations of Pali, they're kind of loaded words that over the century, couple centuries, has taken on different meanings. You know, so words like faith, words like virtue, they feel different now than they maybe did in the 1800s or 1900s. So if faith isn't quite a right word for you, there are a couple ways that we can actually approach this word sadha that might feel a little bit more aligned. And those are confidence or trust, conviction or knowing. The Pali word sadha literally, etymologically, actually means to place one's heart on, to find somewhere safe to rest your heart. So what we're talking about here is actually developing trust, developing confidence in our practice so that we can offer our heart to it, so that we can practice wholeheartedly. But how do we develop that trust, that knowing, that conviction in our practice and in the Dharma? And some of it starts at the very beginning, the reasons that we started practicing in the first place. In the cycle of liberative dependent origination, which is one of the maps of what it looks like to move towards awakening, there are kind of links in this cycle. And the first step in this cycle towards awakening, it actually begins with suffering. The first noble truth. Life has suffering in it. We hurt sometimes. We feel angry. We feel scared. We feel sad. We can't get what we want, or we're separated from the things that we love. The ground that we're starting from is a ground of difficulty. But the second link in that chain of liberation is faith, sadha. So how is it that suffering leads to faith? One of the reasons that this is the case is that when we suffer, when we're going through something really difficult, you know, usually it compels us to look inwards a little more deeply, to try and understand ourselves, to try and make meaning or find skillful ways to be with the things that are painful. When everything's going great, there's not a whole lot of motivation to do deep inner work. You don't see that many people going into therapy because they feel like their lives are just awesome and they want to look inward more. So life's difficulties are often what bring us to the practice. The things that are hard propel us towards the people, towards the experiences, towards the teachings that'll ultimately help us build that confidence in our practice in the Dharma. And, you know, I know when I first came to practice, first in a different tradition, I was a teenager and I had struggled with severe depression for, you know, a fair bit of my childhood and all of my adolescence. And like many adolescents, there was also this kind of sense of existential angst that was really present. I was starting to see the schism between the beauty and the innocence and the wonder of kind of childhood life and the messiness and kind of corrupt systems that were everywhere as I started to move closer to adulthood. And there was just such a sense that, yeah, something was just wrong. Something was off here. And I just didn't understand that. You know, and then it ended up being, as a young person, there were two things that really resonated with this nagging feeling that something was just not quite right. And the first one was punk rock. And the second one was spiritual practice. And I do feel in some ways like the two can actually be quite tied together, because it is really looking at suffering and looking at the things that are not quite right in the world and trying to find creativity, trying to find answers. But I came into spiritual practice, and as I got older, you know, first I was in a Hindu kirtan chanting practice. It was very ecstatic, very blissful. And as I grew older, I got more deeply into the Buddha Dharma. And so much of the teachings felt like they really landed, you know, even the story of the Buddha, so sheltered as a child and really kept away from the realities of the world. And then witness to the realities of old age, of sickness, of death. And this feels so much like the disillusionment that many of us feel either in our adolescence or in, you know, that first decade or so of enlightenment, or excuse me, I wish, of our adulthood. It's just such a common experience, you know? We look around at our lives or around at our worlds, and there's something that just doesn't quite feel right. And I was really fortunate that this disillusionment really planted a kernel of seeking, a little seed of faith that continued to grow and develop, even though it was a very long and winding path. You know, when someone is first developing that sadha, that sense of faith or trust or confidence, in the Dharma. It's often first experienced as what people refer to as either right faith or inspired faith. And that happens really frequently when someone encounters a teacher or a teaching, a book or a story or a community that strikes a really poignant chord in them and helps them see, like, wow, more is possible here. And this type of faith is so beautiful and so valuable because it does open our eyes. It does give us that inspiration that maybe more is out there than we'd previously thought. But the tricky thing is that it's not actually yet rooted in our own lived experience. When we're operating under that bright faith or that inspired faith that's triggered by someone or something else, it's still dependent on that something that's outside of us. And Sharon Salzberg writes about this stage of developing faith. Our sense of what is true is not firmly grounded in our own experience, but seems to belong to someone or something else that provides it for us when they wish to. The biggest danger is because of just that, in our fear of separating from what seems to be the source of our extraordinary feeling, we might become afraid to ask questions, to wonder, to give voice to uneasiness. And, you know, this is something that might resonate in terms of spiritual practice, but it might also resonate in terms of a relationship that you've been in, or a workplace or a community you've been involved in. Sometimes when it feels like the thing out there is what's giving us the hope, giving us the inspiration, rather than something from within, it can be a little precarious. And, you know, this was something that was true for me as a teenager. By the time I was 15 or 16, I'd connected with a very powerful spiritual teacher. And the experience that I had practicing with this person was profound. To the extent that really by the time I was 18, I knew that to some extent I wanted to devote my life to spiritual practice. And it also turned out that this teacher was actually quite unethical. And when that became clear to me as a young person, it really knocked that inspired faith off of its pedestal. And it took time to return to practice and to rekindle my trust, my confidence in the truth of what I'd experienced. And this isn't something that I speak about a whole lot when I'm teaching, but I do think it's really important to name because, you know, while our sense of confidence or trust or conviction in the Dharma might first be sparked by someone or something else, ultimately, our task is actually to develop that sense of confidence and trust within ourselves. And part of what we're doing as we move from that inspired faith that's dependent on another into this verified faith that's grounded in our own experience, our own knowing, we're deepening tremendously in our trust in the Dharma. Because the truth is, you don't have to depend on anyone else for your access and belonging to the Dharma, to this practice. This is your path, and at some point, it's up to you to really and truly make it yours. And that might look a little bit different than what someone else's practice looks like. And that's okay. Because part of what's totally spectacular about the Dharma is that it relies on you cultivating and trusting your own experience. You know, in some ways, I feel like the Dharma is the opposite of being gaslit. You know, instead of someone telling you what you should be thinking and that your reality is wrong, it's all completely based on your own experience and what's true for you. The Buddha's famous for saying this phrase, ehi pasiko, which roughly translates to come and see for yourself. That Buddha's not saying I have the answers and you should just listening to me. He's saying, come and check it out. See if this helps you. See if it works for you. Because it's really only through our own lived experience of this practice of the Dharma that we'll develop this unshakable faith, this trust that can't actually be knocked off the pedestal. And so the question again is, oh, how do we do that? How do we develop that trust? And it actually brings us back to those five powers. And so, you know, the first encounter with something that sparks a sense of faith or hope or inspiration creates the energy for us to start practicing. So we've got faith, which was the first, and energy, which is the second. And engaging our practice with that energy leads to mindfulness, the third. And so this mindfulness then leads to a deepening of concentration, a unification of the mind, so that as we continue to practice, we're able to have deeper experiences in our practice. And so then this concentration, along with everything that came before it, the faith, the energy, the mindfulness, helps yield those profound insights that spark wisdom, that spark discernment. And so all of these factors balance together and integrate so that that initial little kernel of faith or inspiration can really transform into something that's wholly our own and that propels our practice further and further. And that's what we refer to as verified faith. Trust in that practice because you know, you've seen, your wisdom and your experience has shown you where you can place your convictions, where you can rest your heart. Michelle McDonald says, we develop a relationship with everything so that we're not afraid of anything. That feels like a big part of this. The more we practice, the more we become intimate with our experience, our understanding of our emotions, and our understanding of suffering and freedom from suffering. It starts to take the charge out a little bit. We start to see that when suffering happens in our life, it's not actually personal. It's not a punishment. We start to feel into impermanence, noticing the way that everything in life changes, ebbs, and flows. We start to deepen in this understanding that we're not actually a solid, separate self, but we're more like a verb. We're more like a process than we are an object. And we're connected to all these other processes and all these other verbs in this web of life. And this knowing, when it becomes rooted in our hearts, in our bones, it does start just ever so slowly to dissolve our fear and to replace it to an extent with that trust, that confidence, that faith. And so we develop this in ourselves. And it doesn't mean that we can't really revel in those moments of inspired faith that come from outside of us. Those are a doorway. They're a portal into the deepening in our practice. It's what we're doing here right now, actually, by supporting each other in community. We're both giving each other a source of connection, of a little bit of hope, of inspiration that lies within this entire community, but we're also practicing within ourselves, within our experience. There's a story that Gil Fronsdahl wrote and published in this book of stories that he wrote called The Monastery Within. And the story that, oh, it's my favorite, probably my favorite Dharma story of all time. It's called The Abyss. And in this story, Gil writes, there's a monk who, despite years and years of practice, just hasn't had the same kind of awakening experiences as other people in the monastery. And, you know, he's unhappy about it. As you can imagine, there's a sense of doubt. There's a sense of like, hey, I'm doing all the same stuff as these other people, and they've been having this profound experience. What about me? And one day, the abbess, the leader of the monastery, she comes to this monk and she asks him if he really wants that type of awakening, because there's one last resort that she can offer him if so. And, you know, he says, yeah, of course, I really want it. I'll do the last resort. And so she takes him down to the basement of the monastery, where there's a locked door, and it's an infamous locked door that everyone knows about. Everyone kind of avoids, and nobody knows what's behind it. And this door had been locked for many, many years. And the abbess said, if you want to do this, you can go into the room. The only thing that you have to do once you're in there is walk from this doorway across the room. There's another door. You'll open the door and you'll walk out. That's the only thing you have to do. But once you go in, I'm going to lock the door and I'm not going to come back. And it sounded strange and a little bit daunting, but he agreed. And he walked in, and as the door closed and locked behind him, the monk realized that in the room, there was a small ledge right in front of the doorway that he just stood on. And the rest of the room was a giant abyss. You couldn't see the bottom. It was dark down there, and there were creepy, horrible noises coming from within its depths. And so the monk stood there on this tiny little ledge. And the first day he spent there, he just banged on the door, begging to be let back out, because he couldn't see any way to get to the other side of the room, to the doorway that was opposite him, without facing certain death. And so a couple of days went by, and he went through so many different stages of, you know, grief and anger and despair and confusion. He tried to figure this thing out rationally, and there wasn't an answer. You know, it was just him on this little ledge in a giant cavernous abyss right in front of him and all around him. And so one day, a couple of days in, he sat there and he thought to himself, well, okay, so the instructions that she gave me were simple. I'm just supposed to walk across the room and open the door. Could it really be that easy? And so he mustered up all of his courage, all of his trust, his confidence in both the abbess as a leader of the monastery and the practice that had brought him this far. And just cautiously, he stepped out one foot into the abyss. And as he did so, underneath him, he felt ground. He tried another step and another, and each time, each movement he made, somehow the ground rose up to meet him, just little by little. until he crossed all the way to the other side of the room, opened the door, and walked out. And the story goes that this was a profound awakening for him. And a profound experience in his capacity to trust, to have confidence, and to make, you know, quite literally a leap of faith. Deepama, the really famous, wonderful Dharma teacher, and a teacher to many, many of our teachers and a huge inspiration. She's said to have shared with a student who they were on an airplane together and there was a lot of turbulence and it was feeling real scary. And she looked at the woman she was sitting next to who was really having a hard time with it and said, "The daughters of the Buddha are fearless." And to me, this has always pointed towards sadha. Towards faith, this capacity for trust. You know, we're not necessarily fearless because fear doesn't live in our minds and our hearts. You know, like the monk in Gil's story, sometimes we are downright terrified. That's part of what it is to be human. Things are scary sometimes. But this practice and the leap of faith that it really takes to be present with our minds and our hearts, that possibility of awakening, it's real courage. And I think to an extent, as we cultivate those five powers, part of what we're also cultivating is that courage to take a leap of faith. Because in our practice, you know, no matter what, if we stay on this path, there are going to be moments of, you know, real uncertainty. There's going to be moments when it feels like we're venturing out into the unknown and we don't necessarily have a clear map. So when we cultivate faith or trust or conviction, however you want to hold it, when we follow our path and our practice in a way that we've created something that's known and felt and understood in our own experience, we're creating a safe place to really rest our hearts. And that makes venturing out into those unknown territories so much easier, so much less fearful, even when fear and anxiety are present. And so I thank you, yeah, for your kind attention. And as we move into a little bit of conversation, I'd love to ask, you know, what has strengthened your own trust, your own confidence in this practice? Or if there's anything else that's on your mind. And I see there's a question in the chat. The word is sadha, and it's spelled S-A-D-D-H-A. I'll just pop it into the chat. And so yeah, you're welcome to raise an electronic hand or enter anything into the chat. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.